Hey friend, we've got a huge announcement to share and we wanted you to be the first to know.
Our vision in North Star has always been to create an impact uprising. It's this belief that philanthropy has the power to change the world, not just in our impact, but by unlocking generosity within each of us.
So after more than 500 podcast conversations and gathering this diverse community of We Are For Good around the world, we're ready to unveil the next big unlock to achieving our Impact Uprising vision as we get activated together in community.
Meet Impact Up, the gathering for social impact leaders ready to shift the sector for good. Our first Impact Up is happening July 11th, and we want you to join us as we convene virtually for a day around one singular topic. We're going to be blending different styles of content from brilliant minds across sectors, while also gathering insights and ideas from you in the community, all of it leading to action.
Then, through the power of the We Are For Good community, that same evening, Impact Up is gathering in local communities to continue the conversation started that day. From San Francisco to Baton Rouge and Denver to Tampa, community is gathering in person. We are moving from conversations to activation, and we're so excited.
It's all about gathering, discussing, activating, and watching the shift happen. You can also count on that signature levity, inspiration, and joy you always get in our space because you know it's a vibe, y'all.
Registration is live. Head on over to impactuprising.com. You can see all about the event and find a local meetup near you. We can't wait to see you there. That's impactuprising.com. Let's go. Hey, I'm John.
And I'm Becky.
And this is the We Are For Good podcast.
Nonprofits are faced with more challenges to accomplish their missions and the growing pressure to do more, raise more, and be more for the causes that improve our world.
We're here to learn with you from some of the best in the industry, bringing the most innovative ideas, inspirational stories, all to create an impact uprising.
So welcome to the good community. We're nonprofit professionals, philanthropists, world changers, and rabid fans who are striving to bring a little more goodness into the world.
So let's get started. Becky, your favorite topic on the podcast today, right?
It is truly one of my favorite topics. And actually today we are combining two of our favorite things that we talk about quite consistently here, which is our like avid love of Gen Z and what they're doing to completely reshape the philanthropic landscape. So we have this beautiful partnership and collaboration that is on the podcast today. We have Elizabeth Rika with Classy on the podcast, along with Alyssa Boger from Pursuant Giving DNA. They really dove deeply into the power of engaging Gen Z, learning about their nuances, learning about their behaviors. They put it all into an incredibly comprehensive report. It's free. It's accessible for you today. And we're going to dive deep. So before we get into this incredible report, I got to give some background on Elizabeth and Alyssa because they are just two stellar Hallmark marketers and communicators in the sector. And I'm going to start with Elizabeth. Elizabeth has been this incredible strategic marketing leader with more than a decade of experience across digital and owned marketing channels. And her joy really comes from advising nonprofits on how to maximize the impact of their online fundraising strategy. And boy, Elizabeth, have you brought that to bear today in this report. We're really excited about it. And Alyssa is the Senior VP of Client Strategy over at Pursuant Giving DNA. Prior to joining Pursuant, she managed Pepperdine University's annual giving program. And I absolutely love that, Alyssa, your connection to that sort of Southern California is intersecting with Elizabeth also, who's living out that way. And so Alyssa's really just one of us, y'all. She's been in the trenches. She's supported all aspects of the annual fundraising operation, from coordinating direct mail and telemarketing to all the things in renewal, acquisition, and stewardship. So we've got some experts on the podcast today, and we are going to talk about the evolution and awesomeness of Gen Z. So ladies, thanks for joining us on the We Are For Good podcast.
Thank you for having us. So excited to be here.
Well, before we dive into this report, which has so much rich data, we want to get to know you all. So Alyssa, I'm going to start with you. And if you can just kind of give us a brief little background into who you are and how you fell into this work, we would love to hear it.
Yeah, thanks. I've been thinking about this because I know this is a question you guys start with, like, how do I share about myself? And I think it kind of comes down to I've always just had this desire to help people, to help others. I remember in like projects, I wanted to be a doctor in like first grade, and then that became a human rights lawyer by middle school, and then like international relations by college. And
We could be friends. All of these passions are great. We could be friends.
Yes. Yeah. And so it kind of just continued down that path of how do I contribute to a world that can be more equitable or more just or more loving? And I was thinking about it the other night, like, where did that come from? And I was reminded of an event in kindergarten, of all places. My family had moved over the Christmas holiday from Austin to Dallas. And if you know Texas, you can kind of appreciate the total culture change.
Worlds away.
That is Austin to Dallas. And, you know, I rolled up into kindergarten and, you know, a new semester, and we was really met with like the mean girls of kindergarten, and wanted to play like house with them and be, you know, one of the family members in the house. And I was told that I would and always would be the maid of like this pretend group. And it was really like the first time that I felt that my value was in question, or that it was somehow tied to my circumstances or to like perceived have versus have nots. And so I think from just that moment, I had this feeling of, I don't ever want to feel like this again. And I don't want other people to feel like that. And so I think it's just been a recurring theme of what I've placed importance in, and the roles that I've seeked out, have sought out, and the opportunity I have to be in fundraising now today to be a small part of making the world a better place and trying to open people's eyes and perspectives and hearts to the causes that we get to advocate for and fundraise for. And it's why I stay in this sector today. It is a crazy place to be. But I don't know that I'd want to be anywhere else, than just, you know, kind of in the trenches of being able to make an impact in the organizations that I get to partner with at Pursuant.
You are so much more than a maid, my friend. You are the world changer. Glad you rose into it. What about you, Elizabeth?
Well, I don't have a memorable story like that from kindergarten, although I will say that scares me a little bit, because my daughter is 14 months old, and I've already seen some instances where there's some mean three-year-olds that don't want to play with her yet. And it can be a tough world out there. But I would say that my journey, you know, I grew up, I really wanted to be a vet. That didn't happen, because then I was faced with reality that animals die, and could not stomach that as a human. Then I wanted to be a lawyer, and then really switched to journalism and marketing towards the end of my college career. And I kind of landed it classy by happenstance. Right out of college, I was hired by a tech company in San Diego. I wouldn't say it was my dream job, but I just really wanted to stay in San Diego after school, and I made it work. The technology, it powered registration for large endurance events. And ironically, shortly after I started there, the company was acquired by a private equity firm and was relocating to Dallas. So I could have been your neighbor, Alyssa, but I did not want to pursue that. And so my boss at the time gave my name to Scott Chisholm, who was the founder and CEO of Classy. It was actually called Stay Classy still at that time. I thought it was a little bit of a joke, but I met with Scott. He really sold me on his vision for how technology could really positively impact nonprofits and ultimately help them raise more money to fund their missions. And I was hired as their first full-time marketing associate. I was the 25th employee. So I've been through several iterations of the company. We've evolved over time, because today we have over 400 employees on our team. Thousands of nonprofits leverage our technology. And as a marketer, I work in B2B marketing. That is my job, but it is so rewarding to work in this space, and that our customers are nonprofits. I mean, I'm not pushing, you know, cybersecurity software. Like, we're talking about fundraising technology and the positive impact that it can have. And I'm just so incredibly grateful to still be here. I have a fantastic team, and I love the space, and I hope to be here for a long time.
Goodness gracious. I mean, this is when we ask that question. when you understand the motivations behind people, it just gives depth to everything that comes after. And that's honestly where we want to start with the Gen Z conversation. We all know the stereotypes. We all know the things that are like put on this generation right now, kind of in mainstream. But we see something different. And I know y'all do too from putting together this report, because you understand below the surface, their identity is really tethered to really cool engagement around causes that they feel passionate about. And so as we kind of dive into this conversation, I want to talk about, you know, what is motivations that you're seeing, and what is, why study Gen Z and why now? Kind of answer some of those things to get us started.
Yeah, it was so fun diving into this, especially working with some Gen Zs like on my team, who just bring this passion and energy to the work that they do. Just at a general level, Gen Z are ages 12 to 26 today. So they span this interesting time. And a number of them are in the workforce or are about to enter. So they're not like these, just all these young kids, they're actually adults, which is what's really engaging for the nonprofit sector. Is we've had this, you know, downward decline in acquisition now for quite a while. And they represent, I think, in a lot of ways, opportunity, with, you know, being the largest generation. There's this continuous coming of age of potential donors that we might be able to create connection and relationship with. So just from the perspective of being able to grow, you know, your organization, your donor base, there's just a lot of potential. But I think beyond that, they also represent really unique qualities. They're the most diverse generation. And so they have unique perspectives around diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging, and the importance of that at like a human level, because they live it and they see it and they're amongst it. In our research, we saw, I think, 22% come from homes with at least one immigrant parent. And so that brings a different perspective. They're maybe speaking more than just English at home. And so what does it, you know, look like to come from a place that's multilingual or multicultural and has all of these different ways of looking at the world. So I think it's just a very unique set of characteristics and just personality that they bring to the way that we approach strategy. And then they're also just very generous. So they're prioritizing philanthropy. They're the least likely of generations to actually stop their giving if they have some type of financial stressor. So as we're met with reports about the economy or inflation, you know, a lot of organizations' donor files are built around boomers and older donors. And so as they have fixed incomes and they're having to make difficult giving decisions, maybe scale back on their level of philanthropy, we have this generation that is prioritizing giving back and sees that as a part of their identity, of like making a difference and prioritizing that above maybe other financial decisions, because it's just so core to who they are. And I think that core part is that they've just been emboldened by growing up in a world that's just been drenched in like media and sensational headlines and this constant connection that they have to people through their devices. And so for so many of them, the world just feels so insecure and so unsafe and so unstable. And that it's up to them. If no one else has been able to solve that, then it's up to us as a generation, as Gen Z, to solve for it. So I think there's so much more of advocates and like trailblazers, and feel like they have to step up and be part of the change, especially when it comes to causes like racial justice or climate change or gun legislation. Those things that are so key to the experiences they've had as they've grown up, and now they're at this age where like, if no one else has solved for it, then we have to solve for it. And, you know, we can't just wait for someone else to step up. It's got to be us. And I think that feeling of like ownership and advocacy and power to change is more amplified with this generation than maybe we've seen in others.
I could not agree with you more. And it sitting on the sidelines watching Gen Z literally not just reshape this sector, the way that we approach them, but the way that they are reshaping the world. And I think the aha for me with Gen Z was when I found out that the iPad debuted the same year that Gen Z was born. And it's like, holy smokes, like that was like 2010, you know? And it's like this group has not grown up with connectivity. They have not grown up without technology. They are learning and connecting in such interesting ways. And the thing that is so powerful and encouraging to us is they are truly heart-led. Like they really lean into the things that they care about. And I mean, we've done a big series on like giving as identity, and you talked about that. It's not just a thing they do. It is a part of who they are. They do it socially. They want to go and fundraise or go to the 5K with their friends. They want to get in cohorts. They want to get in giving circles. They want to talk about it on their socials. And it's just, it's such a fascinating like experiment watching it unfold. So Elizabeth, I want to ask you about this report, because I think this report on engaging, how to engage Gen Z, and just putting it that simply, nonprofits, this is how you engage them. You put together this brilliant combined data. And I just want to like create some space and say, bravo, Classy and Pursuant, for coming together and pooling your data and your expertise, you know, in this Evolve partnership to build such a data-rich report. So you really talk about the authenticity of Gen Z. So can you give us a high-level overview of your key findings and kind of just tell us, Elizabeth, what stuck out?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's probably, Alyssa touched on this a little bit, but I think it's good to start with their just propensity to give, you know, while, you know, Gen Z's total donation volumes is lower than other generations, we are seeing that increase over time. You're seeing baby boomers, some of them are starting to hit their giving ceilings, and we actually saw donations decrease in 2022 in comparison to prior years. And then you contrast that with Gen Z, and the amount that they gave from 2021 to 2022 actually increased. So as Alyssa was saying, as they're starting to become more established in their careers, they do have that propensity to give. And we can only assume that that is going to increase over time. And when you're looking at just their spending habits, they are prioritizing giving. We have data that backs that up. You have 57% of Gen Z donors plan for donations in their financial budgets every single year, which is just awesome. Like, that's awesome. And you couple that with, you know, 40% have made just small changes and sacrifices in their daily expenses to have the funds to donate. So again, I don't think that we can expect them to surpass boomers as it relates to the total, you know, volume in which they're giving, but there is that really high propensity to give, which is only going to grow over time. And so I think nonprofits can sometimes forget the value of those micro gifts, right? You know, it might not be a huge one-time donation out of the gates. It might be a small monthly donation because they grew up in this subscription-based world. But that can grow over time, right? If you have a really strong stewardship and engagement strategy. So there's just a lot of opportunity. And I think the other thing I would add is, you know, I think of my mom. She is a boomer. She's got the nonprofits that she donates to in her Rolodex. She is never shifting away from those organizations. If you want some share of her wallet, it's got to be a really good appeal to get in there. But Gen Z, they're not overly committed to any particular cause yet. They're actually out there looking for causes that they can be an active participant in. And so now is really the time to get in front of them. There is an opportunity to capture their attention, to get them engaged with your organization, and then grow that engagement over time. So again, I just think, you know, for me personally, it's just so, there's so much opportunity. And I think that can be overlooked. And I think that this generation is going to be very committed to making a change in this world for all the reasons that Alyssa shared, which is really exciting.
Well, I love this conversation because I feel like this is happening, this evolution's happening at the same time. Our tech opportunities are so much different than they were 20 years ago. So our ability to engage at scale is a lot different than what, you know, we had the tools to do even when we were starting our nonprofit careers. So I want to talk about how Gen Z right now is connecting to these giving opportunities. Like, how are they gathering? Where are they gathering? And who's really inspiring them to join right now? What's that look like?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think as we work with some organizations and we talk about like your social media strategy or digital strategy, it's a lot of, okay, how are we using Facebook to connect with donors? And that is not where Gen Z lives at all. So they would be on YouTube or on TikTok or on Instagram. And that's really where you've got to start cultivating some type of presence or personality. I was talking with a colleague at To Ride on Her Arms just a few weeks ago. And yes, she's amazing. And she was talking about being able to create like a personal connection. So as I think about like the types of organizations that are like national nonprofits or their entities, even maybe regional organizations that lead with brand, how do you start to maybe lead with the voice of a person or an individual or a beneficiary? So do you have someone who does your Instagram stories or your TikTok videos or YouTube ads that's a consistent, warm, authentic individual that can cultivate a relationship between people who might be consuming your content and the organization, because that personal connection is so important to Gen Z. They're going to be a lot more weary of brands that feel too corporate or not human or not authentic and transparent. And so being able to be a little bit maybe more vulnerable and more personal in communications, I think is going to be really important to creating those types of initial connections with Gen Z individuals who might be searching for, like Elizabeth said, that next cause that they want to connect to and learn more about. So it's kind of that like teaser to get them interested and really connected and starting to learn more about who you are and what you do and how they can be involved. So it's going to be a bit of a mind shift. You know, I'm one that I probably shouldn't admit this, but I am not on TikTok. I have tried to like scale back the social media consumption, but it does require us to like get in those spaces. And you may not have a TikTok profile and you don't need to post things, but you can at least like see what other organizations are doing or other people are following. And how can you maybe start to bring those learnings into the way that you lead your nonprofit or guide communications as a team?
I agree with you. I don't think every platform is for everyone. And we're not saying today that you need to go and immediately create an account on TikTok or Snapchat or YouTube or wherever it is to engage with this group, because I think your point about authenticity is it, they can sniff that out. I mean, my kids are Gen Alpha, but like their generation 100% sniffs out people who are phony and fake and want something from them. And I will say, if you are interested on getting on TikTok, I got to give a little plug to this nonprofit because I just think they do an amazing job. But Pencils of Promise has an amazing TikTok, and they are created by a Gen Z staffer who is amazing. And I mean, there's great nonprofits that are out there doing this. I think what you're saying really resonates, both you ladies. It's that Gen Z is the ultimate long game play. And I mean, that's our core value too in our company, is we do play the long game. And so what we want you all to start doing is thinking and prioritizing this group, because to me, this group can help us get away from building the donor pyramid where it's just so steep, straight up to that top donor. They widen that base in a very profound way, to the point where I think the base can grow straight up almost and not, you know, shift and get so microscopic at the top. So I want to talk a little bit about like how nonprofits can start to begin building their Gen Z donor base. And we know this generation has a really deep penchant for wanting to be seen for who they are and the gifts they bring to the table in whatever form that gift may be. It might be their financial gift. It could be their time or their story, network. Like, how do we flex our database and build these intentional engagement funnels while still giving these Gen Zers that one-to-one experience that they value so much? So help me with that.
I think, first of all, you know, we've talked about this already, but it's not just all about the money with Gen Z, right? Yeah. Gen Z donors are the most likely to support a cause through advocacy. They're actually 6 times more likely to advocate on behalf of an organization in comparison to boomers. So I think, you know, if you can operate with that in the back of your mind, it's not always about driving that conversion, right? Or that first one-time donation. If you think about how you're leveraging your social channels and how you're really activating, you know, Gen Z supporters to advocate on your behalf, it can kind of, you know, your mission, your impact, your story can spread like wildfire. And ultimately, that just increases kind of the network of supporters that you can then tap into and make an appeal, a direct appeal to. So I think that there's a lot of opportunity there. And I think that that might be difficult for some people, right? Like, we're so ingrained. I can say this as a marketer, you know, we've been so ingrained over the years to drive performance, to drive conversions, to drive ROI. And a lot of what we're seeing happen right now with the shift to more user-generated content, to more authentic storytelling, data privacy laws, you know, AI, that's a whole thing. Conversions are actually getting deprioritized, right? And connection is elevating to the top. So I think first and foremost, really think about how you are connecting with Gen Z supporters. How are you elevating your story and how are you activating them to be advocates on your behalf? And then once you do that, yes, you do need a strategy to capture support. I think that peer-to-peer fundraising is a fantastic way to activate Gen Z donors. We know that Gen Z is more likely to support an individual directly versus a, you know, big behemoth organization. So how can you activate a Gen Z advocate on your behalf to fundraise for you and then expand your network, your donor pool through that? There's more work that goes into after, you know, that acquisition takes place, because we do know that it can be harder to retain people that give through peer-to-peer campaigns. But if you've got a strong stewardship strategy in place, if you're thinking about how you're elevating your story, really bringing those people into your community, the likelihood of them giving to your organization again will increase. And ultimately, that's just going to, as you were saying, Becky, increase this base, right? And present more opportunity for giving over time. So it's a hard one to move away from, you know, thinking about conversions and that, you know, that one-time gift conversion all the time. But again, there's a ton of opportunity if you can kind of shift your mind away from that and really focus on advocacy, awareness, and just connection. It will translate into dollars in the long run.
I mean, that's a beautiful answer, because I do think like this is what Evolve leadership teams are talking about, of like, how do we find ways for meaningful engagement? And I want to go to like the first, it was like one of the first pages of the report that y'all outlined the top 3 values of Gen Z donors. I just want to lift this because I keep thinking these words and then y'all are like saying them and threading them, but it's like, it's core to this, that the values of Gen Z donors are authenticity, transparency, and 3 political leanings, which I kind of want to double click on that a little bit too.
I didn't see that.
But I think like, if you start to think holistically, and we encourage people to think about like, what's the bigger right question, you realize that making whatever impact or difference we want to make in the world is a lot more than just money anyway. So how can we like have strategies that activates people that maybe don't have money today, but they have their social capital and their influence and maybe their hustle, and finding meaningful ways transparently to get them involved and using their voice and even politically. So will you talk a little bit about that? This is kind of getting into the part of the conversation we talk about impact. You know, how do we really activate and create an impact with Gen Zers that want to surround our mission? So I want to, you know, throw it to you, whichever one of you that wants to hop in.
Yeah, I can speak to that a bit. So in some of the research, we've seen almost half of Gen Z is going to learn about a cause or be influenced to follow one by the influencers that they follow. So there is so much trust that's placed in people that they have never met. It's not their friends usually that are telling them, or their family. It's a person. It's a personality. It's an influencer that has this like I guess, social capital or just trust that they have built over time. And so I think finding ways that you can tap into that influencer network. And I mean, it's a business. People are making money. They have teams behind them that are supporting their work. And so you can send them a DM, direct message, or you can reach out to their team and you can see, you know, develop partnerships with those individuals that you feel like can align genuinely with your mission. It's not just about trying to find the influencer with the most followers or the most popular, but someone who can really speak with that authenticity about their connection, their passion for your cause that can really amplify your mission to others. That I think is a way that you can stretch your dollars and your investment if you're looking into this area further, because that one voice could reach thousands or hundreds of thousands, as opposed to focusing on maybe just ads where you might get a certain number of impressions, but it doesn't carry that weight of someone actually promoting your organization. So I think that's like one aspect of strategy that has not been in our normal like tool
belt. That's not in our toolbox,
you know,
at all.
Acquisition, direct mail and stewardship campaigns and, oh, what's your influencer strategy and your influencer budget? Like that's just not on most organizations' radar or expense sheet. And so I think that's going to be a shift in just how we think about the way that we're engaging with this generation. And the way that we can really start to build those connections at scale.
I think that there's also an opportunity for nonprofits to elevate their staff, right? I think that Gen Z wants to learn from the people that are actually working at your organization. And so who in your staff can act as a voice for your organization while it might be uncomfortable, but can they start to elevate, you know, their day-to-day or elevate stories of impact that they're seeing, you know, firsthand? There's a lot of opportunity in that. And I think that that is where you can really play into that authenticity and really drive connection with Gen Z, because again, they don't want to hear from your big brand corporate voice. They want to hear and learn from other people. So giving your staff the opportunity to elevate their own voices and directly connect with Gen Z is a great opportunity to drive further connection with them.
Elizabeth, you have my heart for that comment, because that is where it's at. I mean, I think we are so used to just putting our CEO as the mouthpiece of our organization, and that just does not seem tenable to the majority of human beings, because we are not that. However, if I got to know Alyssa at my local nonprofit that's working on food insecurity, and I find out, oh, she actually accessed this when she was a child through her family, the work becomes so much more powerful, or what Alyssa has seen draws me in. And so I really value what you all are saying. You ladies know your stuff. And I would honestly give like one little pro tip for the community, and it would be like, that long tactical to-do list that you have, you know, and maybe it's, you know, creating a lot of content for things, hand that off. You can literally put a strategy in place for what Alyssa was talking about with user-generated content, where your rabid fans and your believers are the ones supplying you with that story. And guess what? It becomes so authentic, vulnerable. You get their network plus your network. You can just see how the ripple just continues to expand. So like, let's work smarter, not harder.
I think what you just said, Becky, vulnerable, that is a really, I feel like, key word that for prior generations, it's still uncomfortable. I feel like for a lot of like senior leaders, for probably the CEOs of a lot of organizations, but that is so much of what Gen Z is rooted in. It's in like the heart and the people, and sitting in that discomfort of people's reality and how can we come together to change it. And it may be hard now, it may be difficult to hear, it may be not the ideal, and it may be maybe polarizing, it may be, you know, challenging, but like that's where they want to lock arms to then move forward. And so if you're always presenting these like very beautiful, you know, glossy, safe, full arc stories and content, there isn't that like, I feel like connection for them of like, how can I join you in the problem? How is this really like rooted in the reality of what people are experiencing? When we try to just make it feel more safe or more comfortable. And that's something that a lot of organizations, I think it's going to be interesting to see how some people step into that fully and like own it, and others that it may take a while to get to that space of being more vulnerable.
I got to share a quick story, and John, you will remember this story of exactly that. So John and I, like it was longer than that, more than 10 years ago, we were building this employee campaign for our healthcare organization that everybody on the podcast has heard about. But one of the things we were trying to do was really humanize our CEO. And part of that process was trying to get him to be vulnerable, to share. And we had written this beautiful letter that says, this is why we're having an employee campaign from him. And we wanted to put the personal in it. And he wanted to extract every adjective, every personal everything out of it. And we finally compromised when we said, put your passion icon at the bottom. So we had 26 areas where people could get pediatrics, burn, cancer, transplant. And we said, you need to pick a passion. And he finally said, my mother had cancer. And we support that as a family. We do these walks that we didn't put anything but just that little cancer icon. And we put his name. We didn't put his title. We just put passion cancer. And he came up to me probably 2 weeks into the campaign and said, I've had more people ask me, what is my cancer story? And they didn't know that I had this. And so sometimes we just have to take our administrator, our leader, our board, our volunteers' hands and say, this is actually the way we build community. This is how we build humanity. This is how we build connection and impact. So I believe Gen Z is showing us the way on this, and we need to lean into it. So thank you guys for letting me share.
Thank you for sharing. I got goosebumps.
I know. I have them too. And I'm like, I think it's so good for all of us. Like, we hate to like pigeonhole generational things because some of it, you know, is resonant, and some of it's like, and all of us are better when we show up vulnerably. And I know from just when I share online, the time that I get the most engagement and the most DMs are when you're talking about something that was deeply uncomfortable or awkward or weird.
Which we have a lot of those, I feel like.
But that gives you a little bit more wind and a little more safety to say, hey, that helps people. So I think we can have these better conversations of like how this is mission aligned. And so, you know, we create space for stories, and we want to hear a part of your story where philanthropy's interacted with your life, maybe giving you a gut punch moment, or maybe just a sweet moment that you take us back to where philanthropy has really moved you. I'll start with you, Elizabeth.
All right. So I put a lot of thought into this, and I have a recent story, but I have to start back in high school to give it some context. So in high school, I took a baking and catering course from a teacher, Miss Cardenas. She left.
Thank you, Miss Cardenas, for your service.
She left an incredible impression on me. She was such a dynamic and engaging teacher. I'd say she is the reason why I can go to my fridge today and without a recipe, figure out what to make with a few random items and whip up something really good. And so she also taught baking and catering for special ed students. So she is retired. But in 2021, there was a woman in Houston whose daughter had intellectual and developmental disabilities, and she was getting ready to graduate high school, and she didn't really have any job prospects, just, you know, given her disability. And so her mom wanted to create a safe environment for her to have, you know, a career and something to do with her life after school. So she founded Belong Kitchen, which is for children or young adults with disabilities, and they, you know, can participate in making meals. It's all to-go meals. But Ms. Cardenas came out of retirement and was the program director for Belong Kitchen. And it, you know, I kind of want to shed a tear. Thinking about the impact that she's having on those young adults' life makes me want to shed a tear. And so it's one of those stories that warms my heart and just reminds me of the greatness in some people in this world and the impact that they can have on our communities. And so next time I am in Houston, I am going to the Belong Kitchen. I've heard they're making the pumpkin rolls that she taught me how to make for Thanksgiving, and I'm going to pick them up. And I am also very excited to support them financially because I just think that they're doing great work in the community.
Who else is a puddle on the floor? Thank you for that story, Elizabeth.
Yeah.
Alyssa, what about you?
I think one of the things that has really stuck with me all these years would be in college. I had like the extreme privilege of being able to study abroad my sophomore year. And a group of us on, I think it was like our spring break, decided that we were going to do some type of service project. We did that regularly at Pepperdine. It's just kind of an aspect of their culture. And so we helped to put on almost like a little camp, for a few days in, a community in Switzerland that was with refugees. And so it was this like apartment building that was full of families who had fled war-torn countries, areas of conflict. And they were all together in one building. And it was individuals who had come from like countries that were at war. So they were living amongst really like their enemies in a lot of ways. But they were all together in this like experience of being away from home and having to depend on others for support and for clothes and for education and finding community and people who used to be like their adversary. And we were doing this camp and like very rudimentary French. I'm, you know, trying to speak to these kids who have some semblance of understanding French at this point, who are like correcting my grammar, you know, or playing games of like musical chairs. And they're just so full of joy. And I'm going to get emotional speaking about it, but it was just, I was, you know, in that moment, you have like your own worries and, you know, feeling like you don't have this or don't have that, or there's these problems or challenges. And yet you're like surrounded by people who literally have fled everything and still find joy and happiness and peace and connection. And so I try to bring that to my mind when I'm having difficult days. But it was just such a perspective shift in how, even if you don't feel like my French was not great, my game of musical chairs was awful, but I could at least make them smile and laugh. And so being able to like have a positive impact, but then knowing that you could learn and be reminded of the goodness in situations like that and from people all around us, I think really just further influenced my desire to be part of this space and this sector, to be part of just those moments of joy and happiness and strength despite what people might be facing and the challenges that are all around us.
I mean, I'm just sitting here with a complete heart of gratitude for you two. And I'm so grateful you found a way to get into this work in a way that aligns with your skills and your values, because y'all, this is what it's all about. It's about sharing our story, sharing our convictions, like uplifting one another, getting together in community. I know we started with this just incredible Gen Z talk, but it's like, this just feels good. This work should feel good. And we need to get back to the heart of that. And I'm just thanking both of you for sharing so vulnerably and authentically. So, way to live your values. And you know, we like round out all of our conversations with a one good thing. And so I'd love to know what your one good thing is. And Alyssa, I'm going to kick it to you first.
That's great. So my one good thing, I was thinking about this. My colleague, when I first started at Pursuant, her name's Rentha Price. She recently actually passed away. She lost a battle with cancer, and she was just like an amazing person. Pursuant was her second career. She had retired from the military, was like an officer. And so she just had this commanding presence about her, but also this like softness, kind of mama bear. So as like a 20 something figuring out, corporate life and all kinds of craziness that goes along with being part of an agency. I remember her telling me when it was a really busy season, I'm more of a doer and a pleaser, and I want to take, you know, everything on and do everything that I can. She's like, Alyssa, no is a complete sentence. And it was just a mind shift for me, like, as we are so busy and we're, I think, trying to create boundaries between personal life and work life, and what can I reasonably take on, and what can I be good at, and what can I be great at, and how do I maybe let someone down to be good in some other place? It was just like a really something I go back to a lot, of that, like, I can say no, and I don't have to justify the no. I don't have to do a lot of explaining and trying to rationalize the no, but like, no is a complete sentence. And I think that's just been helpful for me as I've grown in leadership and trying to be a great coworker, a great leader, a great colleague, a great mom and wife, of being able to like know that I have the ability and power to say no, and that is good enough.
Man, that's hard for this Enneagram too. I can tell you that. I know Julie says that too.
Enneagram 9 struggles too.
Powerful. What about you, Elizabeth?
I think for me, I thought a lot about this. So I am still a relatively young leader. I manage a team of 10 people at Classy that are all fantastic. And I think what I've learned that has contributed in large part to my success is that you want to hire people that are smarter than you in some ways, right? I cannot have all the answers on everything. I am not an expert on every single digital channel. I have an individual on our team that runs email marketing. She is smarter at email marketing than I am, even though I used to do that in my career. And so for me, I really think it's about surrounding yourself with really smart people, and they will end up elevating you and elevating everyone else around them and really contribute to the success of the team. And I remember, you know, this was a few years ago when I was first starting to really build out and hire for the team, I kind of got in my head about that, right? I was like, what's my role here? I'm hiring someone that has more depth of experience in their resume. And so what is my role in a year, you know, if we hire this individual? And I quickly learned to stop thinking about it that way, that that individual was going to inevitably elevate me and teach me a lot. And I have a lot to learn from those that I manage. And so I carry that like really close to my chest every single day. And I really lean into that because I think that, you know, the more that you can learn from others, the more successful you'll be in your career. Even if you're not a people leader, you know, sometimes you need perspective from people that are not in the trenches with you, that you can bounce ideas off of. And so I encourage everyone to, you know, proactively reach out and find those people in your life, because they can get you through really challenging, tough times, and they can celebrate the successes and wins with you. And that's the one good thing I'd share.
Friends, oracles of wisdom here at the end. Right? There's just so much good here. And I think what cool posturing, like closing out the Gen Z conversation, to just realize we all have something to learn from everybody around us, you know, and like, what a better way to go about this. And so as we're rounding out, point to the ways that y'all show up online. We want to hear about Classy. We need to talk about Pursuant Giving DNA. How can people find out more about your awesome organizations and find you as people, as humans, as really empathetic people to follow,
and the report, which we will put in the show notes for sure.
You can find Classy online, classy.org. Follow us on LinkedIn, Instagram. Those would be the two channels I'd recommend. In addition to that, we're also hosting our annual event in Philadelphia next week, the Collaborative. So really looking forward to connecting with leaders from across the entire social sector. It's always just such a great time to be able to, you know, really spend time one-on-one with our community. And if you want to follow me, you can find me on LinkedIn. My Instagram is kind of reserved only for friends and family. I've done that for intentional purposes.
Good for
and
you.
I also rarely post, so I'm not that interesting of a following.
Got it. To be honest.
Pressure off.
Yeah. But reach out and connect to me on LinkedIn. You can find me there and would love to continue the conversation with anyone that's interested.
Yep. Same for me. And then for Pursuant, you can find us online. You can also find Giving DNA on YouTube. So if you're ever curious about the platform, we have a lot of different demos and videos online to be able to see what that tool looks like and how you can leverage it. And then we share all kinds of great content on our LinkedIn page as well.
Please go connect with these incredible ladies and download this report. It has so many interesting nuggets in it, like why Gen Z abandons their giving online and what you need to do. There's so much rich content in there. So I want to thank you both for coming to visit with us. Thank the teams for pulling this comprehensive report together and keep going and doing more good. We just want you to get out there and do your thing because you're doing it so well. It's lovely to meet you both.
Thank you guys.
Thank you. This was great.
Hey friends, thanks so much for being here. Did you know we create a landing page for each podcast episode with helpful links, freebies, and even shareable graphics? Be sure to check it out at the link in this episode's description. You probably hear it in our voices, but we love connecting you with the most innovative people to help you achieve more for your mission than ever before. We'd love for you to join our good community. It's free, and you can think of it as the after party to each podcast episode. You can sign up today at weareforgood.com/hello. One more thing, if you loved what you heard today, would you mind leaving us a podcast rating and review? It means the world to us, and your support helps more people find our community. Thanks, friends. I'm our producer, Julie Comfer, and our theme song is Sunray by Remy Borsboom.
Rabbit fans have always powered the We Are For Good podcast, but now Rabbit fans can get even more goodness and access by joining Good Friends. It's our listener support community for the We Are For Good podcast.
Good Friends comes with perks, exclusive episodes with John and I, including The Good Brief, our new monthly cliff notes of the greatest takeaways and lessons learned from that month, and exclusive AMA episodes where we answer your burning questions and tap our community of experts. Join now or learn more at weareforgood.com/friends.
We can't wait to see you inside. That's weareforgood.com/friends.